Okay, so this week's parsha is Parshas Bamidbar. It's the Shabbos we always do before Shavuos. We always read Bamidbar before Shavuos. I want to just pause for a minute and just have a look at that connection. Why we always do Bamidbar before Shavuos? Just carry on. Pick up from what we spoke about how we out with Israel now, one parasha, and how it all works. That will shed some light on what I want to talk about. So if you have a look at number one in your handout, it's a piece that comes from the Shulchan Aruch. It says, "Ula'olam koyrin parshas Bamidbar Sinai koydum atzeres." We always read the parasha of Bamidbar Sinai before Shavuos. Right? Atzeres means Shavuos. As we know, Shavuos has many names, and Atzeres is one of them. This comes from a Gemara. If you want to have a look at just number three. Sorry, I was out of order, but the things. Interesting Gemara. Just to remind you, so last week, we read Bechukosai, right? Bechukosai contains what we call the curses, the toichacha, the reprimand, right? So, the Gemara says the following. This is the Gemara from Masechta Megillah, number three. Tanya, we learned in a braisa. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Ezra tikein lahen liYisrael. Ezra instituted for the Jewish people. Now, just to put in context, Ezra was one of the men of the Great Assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. He brought the Yidden back to the second Beis Hamikdash, and he was critical in terms of formalizing much of halacha and Torah Shabbat Peh that we have today. So he instituted for the Jewish people sheyiyu koyrin klolay shebetoyras koyanim, that they should read the reprimand in Toiras Kohanim, which is Vayikra, Koidim Atzeres, before Shavuos. Right? Although not on the Shabbos before Shavuos, but before Shavuos. Ushiba Mishnah Torah, and the curse says the reprimand in Devarim, which is Parshas Kisavoy, Koidim Rosh Hashanah, should be before Rosh Hashanah. My time, but what's the reason for this? What's the reason that we read these harsh things before Atzeres, before Shavuos, and before Rosh Hashanah? Says the Gemara, Amar Abaya, Abaya said, V'itema Reish Lakish. Some say it wasn't Abaya, it was Reish Lakish. It's symbolic of the following concept. Kedei shetichle hashana v'kiloi seha. It's in order that the year and all of its curses should come to an end. And as the expression goes, which is brought down elsewhere, v'tochel shana u'birchei seha, and the new year should begin with all its blessings, right? Now, this is an interesting phrase. The Gemara says the year should end, right? What year are we ending this week? You know what I'm saying? Says the Gemara like this. So the Gemara asks a question. Bishleimish v'mishna Torah. When you talk about the curses, the harsh things in Devarim, in Parshas Kisavoy, Ika, I understand what you're saying, because Kadesha tichle shana v'kilesea. I understand that there's a cycle there. There's the end of the year. We're coming towards the end of the month of Elul. We end the year with all of its curses. Ela shebe toiras koyanim, when it comes to Vayikra, otu atzeres Rosh Hashanah, is Shavuos Rosh Hashanah? Shavuos is not the beginning of a year. Says the Gemara, no it is. Atzeres nami Rosh Hashanah. Shavuos is also a form of Rosh Hashanah. Why? That's none, because we learned in the Mishnah, uba atzeres al peiroi so'ilan. We learned in the Mishnah that on Shavuos we get judged on the fruit of the tree. There's a certain judgment on Shavuos, which apparently has to do with the trees. That's why there's one of the reasons why some shuls of Minhag to put tree branches and things, flowers, all over the shul on Shavuos. So there is a judgment that takes place on Shavuos, which means that Shavuos is a cycle of sorts. It's a cycle with regard to certain blessings that have to do with the trees. And therefore, it makes sense to structure the laning that we should always read, B'chukaisa, we should read the Toichacha before Shavuos, so that the year, meaning the year in the sense, the year in the context of the tree cycle, should finish with all its curses, and a new year should begin with all its blessings. Now, yeah? The obvious question is, so why don't we read them, why isn't it structured differently? Why is it structured to read it just before Rosh Hashanah and just before Shavuos? And the answer is we never ever do that, right? We never read before Rosh Hashanah, the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah, the curses. And we never read the Shabbos before Shavuos, B'chukaisa. We never do that. So here we get told that it's important to read at the end of the year, so that the year should finish with all of its harshness, and yet we don't read it at the end of the year. We read it close to the end of the year, as close as we can, but not at the very last Shabbos, right? That seems strange. So in that Gemara, there's a commentary of Tosfos, the famous commentary in the Gemara. Tosfos says that the reason is that we don't do it exactly, because we want the symbolism. So Tosfos says that we want the symbolism of ending the year and all its negativity. We want that symbolism, but we don't want to put that negativity just before the new year. We can't go into the new year with that harshness, so we create a separation. In other words, so we read Bechukosai as close as possible to Shavuos, but not the Shabbos before. We read Parshas Kisavoy as close as possible to Rosh Hashanah, but not exactly the Shabbos before. So we make one separation. So before Rosh Hashanah, we always read Nitzavim, and before Shavuos, we always read Bamidbar, or most years, anyways, as I'll soon show. Now, I'm just doing this introduction to what I want to actually bring out, because here we have an interesting thing this year. I mentioned this already last week, but I want to just elaborate a bit on it. You know, we run Parsha out with Rosh, with Israel. Why? Because the last day of Pesach for us was Shabbos. On the Yontav, we only read Yontav Leining. They were already regular Shabbos. They were reading whatever Parsha it was. And now we're Shwan Shabbos out. Now, we know that there's certain Parshas in the Torah that go together, correct? Some go together, some don't. I mean, there's certain Parshas that are structured to be double Parshas. Achrei, and a lot of them are in Vayikra, right? Achrei Kedoshim, Tazria Mitzoyra, and so on, yeah? So here we have a big question. We're out with Israel. It's not nice to be out one parasha. It's annoying, right? No, it's annoying on all levels. Like, you know, you get emails every week with the Daratoris that comes with the wrong parasha, it's coming from Israel. I have a publication called Dvar Malchus, which is, has in it the Chumash of the week, and the Tanya of the week, and the Rambam of the week. I use this booklet for all the daily things, but my booklet comes from Israel. So now I've got to tear out last week's and put it into this week. It's like annoying, right? Okay. And it's just nice to be all the Yidden to be one parasha. So we have this following problem. Okay, we don't have a choice. We're one parasha out. But we could have made it up the next week. Right? The next week we could have made it up. Because right after Pesach, or 2 weeks after Pesach, whatever, came Achrei Moed and Kedoshim. Right? All we needed to do, us guys, is to... Yeah, I think it was right after Pesach. We just needed a week later to read Achrei and Kedoshim, where Israel was only reading Kedoshim, and boom, we're all made up, 2 weeks, and we're done. Right? When do we actually make it up? Matos Masei. Matos Masei is in the 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av. So we missed out Achrei Kedoshim. Chukas Bolak is another one that can come together. We can make it up then, but we're not going to make it up then. And we're going to wait all the way to Matos Masei. Right? Matos Masei, the Israelis will read Matos and Masei separately. It will be the second week. For them, it will be the first and second week of the 3 weeks. For us, the first week of the 3 weeks will be Pinchas. Second week will be Matos Masei, and then we'll come together. Dvarim will all be sorted out. Yeah? And the obvious question is why? If we have an opportunity to make it up right after, why do we wait all so long? And there's two reasons for it. Two reasons meaning explaining why we don't do it now and we don't do it Bachukas Bolak. The reason we didn't do it now is because we don't want to do that. Because what the Israelis have an interesting concept this year. They, as happens to us all sometimes, but not very rarely, they are going to read, they read Bamidbar last week already. Which means they're not going to read Bamidbar just before Shavuos. Right? And we want to. If we can possibly do it, we'll always do it Bamidbar just before Shavuos. So that Bechukosai is as close as possible to Shavuos, hence the Gemara about finishing the year, the cycle with all its negativity, and we should have one separation. Whereas in Israel this year, they have two separations. Chukosai was 2 weeks ago, last week was Bamidbar, and this week is Nasai, Erev Shavuos, right? So they don't have that only one separation, they have two separations. Similarly, we don't do it in Chukas Bolak either, that's for a different reason, because if we can help it, we want Pinchas in the 3 weeks. Why? Because Pinchas talks about the dividing up of the land of Israel, talks about the sacrifice of the Beis HaMikdash, which is what we're mourning during the 3 weeks. So we want, the Israelis are not going to have Pinchas in the 3 weeks this year, they're going to have Pinchas just before the 3 weeks. They're going to have Matos and Maseh and Dvorim, but we will have Pinchas in 3 weeks. That's why we leave it all the way to Matos Maseh, right? So again, so it's all this, so we want this concept of Bab Midbar being just before Shavuos. That's why we're still out of sync. For now, anyways, right? Okay, that's good. However, this is now set the stage of what I want to talk about. Many Mefroshim point out like this. That's all true. But it comes out like this, right? It comes out on the surface that Bamidbar is just before Shavuos, not because Bamidbar is connected to Shavuos. Bamidbar is just before Shavuos because we want to separate between B'chukoyse and Shavuos. Between the curses and the yontif, right? That's on the surface. But we know that everything is b'ashgacha pratis. And the Shalom HaKadosh points out that when a yontif happens in the parasha, it's always connected to the parasha, even though it's not necessarily not good, right? So therefore, the fact that we make such an effort, and emphasized by the fact that in the diaspora, we're actually putting off being in sync for so many weeks, we could have made it up a long time ago and avoided the nuisance, right? But we put it off because we dafka want Bamidbar before Shavuos. It cannot be just because it's separating between B'chukosai and Shavuos. There must be an intrinsic connection between the Parsha Bamidbar and Shavuos. 12? Okay. Which is the subject of today's share. I'm going to share with you three ideas of how Bamidbar is connected to Shavuos. So we get a bit of the Parsha, we get a bit of Shavuos as well, being that this Shabbos is Erev Shavuos, and then we have Sunday, Monday, which is Shavuos. Okay. So let's just read a little bit the introduction to Bamidbar. So, number two, right? Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the opening pasuk of the new Bamidbar, the new Sefer, Bamidbar. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, Bamidbar Sinai, in the desert of Sinai. Well, there you can see a connection. That's a simple connection because the Torah was given in Sinai. Okay, but okay. The Oyel Moed, he spoke to him in the tent in the Mishkan called the Oyel Moed. Ve'echal haChodesh Hasheni, in the first of the second month. Bashan Hasheni is in the second year. Let's say some minutes with Mitzrayim Lamar when they went out of Egypt. Well, what did he talk to him about? What was the mitzvah? The mitzvah was Se'u Esroish Kladas B'nei Yisrael. Count the heads of the Jewish people. Count all the males, and then as the pasuk continues, that has to be the males dafka from 20 and upwards, and they were counted as one of the censuses that happened during the time that the Yidden were in the Midbar. Okay. Incidentally, I saw in a sefer. This is not the main pirush I want to share with you, but just a little cute thing. You know that when the Torah was given on Shavuos, both the Torah Shabbat Peh and the Torah Shabbat and the Torah Shabbat Peh was given, right? So if you look, it says that the pasuk emphasizes that Hashem spoke in Midbar Sinai, which is where the Torah was given, the Ohel Moed, which is a name for the Mishkan, the tent of meeting, right? The word Ohel has the gematria of 36, right? So the Mefarshim say, it's brought down somewhere that, I'm saying, who brings it down? Oh, I can't see the recording. No, because I copied it from the Sefer I saw where I checked this morning. So we have, you know, a copy, it's a bit complicated. But anyway, one of the great stories says that it's a remez, it's a hint to the 36 mesechtes in Gemara, tractates, the 36 tractates in the Gemara, right? That's what was brought down. So we know that's the Talmud, the Gemara, is like the body of Torah Shabbat Peh that we have today, so that's a hint also to the Torah Shabbat Peh in Megivin and Sinai. So this particular commentary that I was looking at asked the question, he says, well, it's not 36, it's 37. So that doesn't help. Then he says, the truth is, if you look at the Rambam says that there's 35 tractates, right? What's going on here? I mean, you can count them up. It's not like a, right? So the Rambam is obviously following the view. There's a whole thing, you know, we have at the very beginning, you know, the Mishnah is, the Mishnah, there's 20, whatever, 36 or 37, 35, there's the tractates, but then they all come from the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is divided into six sections, right? Beginning of the third section, right? You have what's called Nezikin, the nezikin is the laws of damages and everything. The first three mesechtas there is called Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra. It's called the first gate, the middle gate, and the last gate. According to some, that's all really one mesechta. We divide them up for whatever reason, but actually it's all considered one mesechta. So that explains the Rambam, that he says there's 35, because if you count up, there's actually 37, but if you count those three as one mesechta, there's actually only 35. If that's the case, we can answer the 36, because for some reason, it's a very interesting thing. You know, we have two Talmuds, the Babylonian Talmud and the Jerusalem Talmud, Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi, right? For some reason, now there are mesechtas, for example, that don't have a Gemara on it, right? There are mesechtas that only have Mishnah but don't have Gemara. One of those mesechtas is Shkalim, the mesechta talks about the half a shekel, yeah? However, in the Yerushalmi, there's a mesechta on Shkalim, and for some reason, it made it into the Talmud Bavli. So if you buy a Talmud Bavli, after Pesachim, there's a Masechta Shkalim. It's a Gemara, but it's not from the Babylonian Talmud, it's from the Jerusalem Talmud. For some reason, it made it in there. And that's the custom. Like, for example, those who learn Daf HaYomi, Raka Daf HaDei, they're learning the Babylonian Talmud, not the Jerusalem Talmud, but Shkalim is learned in the Daf HaYomi cycle, because it's in the Bavli. So therefore, if you go according to the Rambam's opinion that there's only 35 Masechtas, and you add in the Shkalim, which made it its way to Talmud Bavli, you got 36. That explains the 36 Masechtas. Okay, just a cute little thing. All right. So, the first connection between Bamidbar and the giving of the Torah is, of course, the fact that the Torah was given in the Midbar. Okay. So some of the first thing, they quote the following Medrash. Let's have a look. Number 4, right? This medrash is on Parshas Bamidbar, and it makes reference to Matan Torah. It says, "Vayedaber Hashem l'Moshe b'Midbar Sinai." Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Midbar, called the Midbar Sinai, which means the Midbar that the Torah was given in. Yeah. Says the medrash, "Lama b'Midbar Sinai." Why do we emphasize Midbar Sinai? Mikan shanu chachamim. From here, the rabbis taught us that begimel dvarim nitna ha-Torah, that the Torah was given with three things: ba'esh, ba'mayim, u'ba'midbar. It was given with fire, water, and a desert. Okay, now we'll see what that means in a second. Now, if you just skip a little bit, it gives psukim. Now, one interpretation is the medrash itself. If you have a look at the third to last line, like at the end of the line, v'lama. Says the Medrash, V'lama nitna begimel dvarim halalu. Why was the Torah given with these three things? Ela ma elu chinom, just like these three things are for free. Although today we get charged for our water, but these three things are essentially free. In Midbar, you don't have to pay to go into a desert. You have to pay for fire. And you don't have to pay for water, essentially. Ma elu chinom l'chol boya elam. Kach divrei Torah, so too, the words of Torah chinam are for free. Shenemar, as it says, hoy kol tzama l'chul amayim. Anyone that is thirsty should go to the water. The Navi says that, and that's a reference to Torah, which is compared to water. Okay. So what does this all mean? So in the Shulah Pinchas, he brings a medrash like this. A very strange medrash, that when the Torah was received, when the Yidden received the Torah on Shavuos, the nations of the world were jealous. This is what the Medrash says. And they came to Hashem and they said, even though there's another Medrash that says Hashem actually offered it to them, they rejected it, okay. But you know, once it happened, it sounded good, so they said, why? So they said, Ma ra'uli skaru yosemin umis. Why is this nation meritorious to become close to Hashem through the Torah more than any other nation? Right? So Hashem stopped them, and he stopped them in their tracks, and he said, bring me the book of Yuchsin, bring me the book of lineage, and we'll see where these Jews come from. Now, what's this Medrash brought for? Because the Medrash does this to connect the end. You know, last week we finished the book of Bamidbar, and the book of Vayikra, and this Shabbos we start Bamidbar, right? What was the last pasuk in Bamidbar? The last pasuk was, that the Vayikra ends with the pasuk. I should have copied it, but I forgot. Eila hamitzvos asher tziva Hashem is Moshe. These are all the mitzvahs that Hashem gave to Moshe, to the Bnei Yisrael at Har Sinai. That's where the pasuk ends. After many, many mitzvahs in the book of Vayikra, it says, Eila mitzvahs. These are the mitzvahs that God gave the Jewish people at Har Sinai. The very next mitzvah, the very next pasuk, is Parshas Bamidbar, where the Torah says that the Torah was given in the Midbar Sinai, and it gives it the commandment to count the Jewish people, to take a census. From that, the Medrash learns, why is the census connected to the mitzvahs that were given at Sinai? So this is where the Medrash makes the whole thing, that what happened was, the nations of the world came and they were jealous of why we received the Torah. So Hashem said, well, so let's take a census, let's see who is who over here, let's see where they come from. Okay. So it's a bit of a strange Medrash, because what does this mean? We know that, in fact, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos which says that a person should prepare himself to learn Torah. She'eino Yerushalach. The Torah doesn't come with inheritance. The Torah is every Jew's on his own merit or her own merit, and you just have to learn. You have to just learn Torah, right? It wasn't given to you. You didn't get it because you're your grandfather or your great grandfather. You're a Yid. It's your Torah, right? So how does it answer the question? What does the Medrash mean? And Hashem said, I'll tell you why they got the Torah. Let's have a look where they come from. Let's have a look who came before them. Let's take a census. And really, because one part of the census also was that it wasn't just counting people, it was also that they had to produce their family documents, their family tree, so to speak, right? So he explains the following idea. And with this, he explains this Medrash that the Torah was given with fire, with water, and with a midbar. And it comes from Reb Meir Shapira. Reb Meir Shapira was, you know, the founder of the yeshiva in Chachma Lubin. I think we mentioned him last week. And he's the one that, the founder of Daf Yomi and so on. And he says the following. He says there's a famous Gemara which says that there's only one way to truly acquire Torah. And that is with Mesiris Nefesh, with really self-sacrifice. You have to work really, really hard. We talked about this a bit last week, right? In fact, the Gemara has a real strong language used with this, that if a person wants to learn Torah, it's got to do with the pasuk and later on in Parshas Chukas, where it talks about the laws of the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, talks about the laws of purity, and it says, there's a funny pasuk, it says, Zois Torah sa'adam ki yomus po'al. This is the Torah, this is the law that we're explaining. Adam ki yomus po'al, a person who dies in a tent, everything that comes into the tent will become impure, and so on and so forth. So there's a Gemara that takes the words, just the four words together, and says, Zoysa Torah, this is the Torah. You want to acquire Torah? You want to really get Torah and acquire Torah and internalize the Torah? Adam ki yomus po'al, it's going to be a person who dies in the tent. And what does that mean? It means, says the Gemara, a person can only really acquire Torah if you're ready to kill yourself for the Torah. Figuratively speaking, right? Okay, so that's it. In other words, Reb Meir Shapira says, we find that Torah doesn't come with comfort. Torah comes with hard work and the readiness to sacrifice what we have for Torah, right? I mean, it doesn't bring this, but interestingly enough, I think I've mentioned this before, we find that the greatest producing of Torah and depth of Torah was done in periods of Jewish history that were terrible, absolutely terrible. It was amazing. I mean, the Gemara was written in the most terrible, terrible time, Rabbi Akiva. But not only that we find the Tosfos, the commentaries of Tosfos were written in times of pogroms and in times of the Crusades. The Shach and the Tazl, if you look at the history, look terrible lives. The Rambam was on the run. He wrote Mishnah Torah where he was completely poor. It's amazing, right? But that's Torah. Torah comes like that. Torah is acquired when you have nothing else in your life besides Torah. In fact, we know the Gemara says that, okay, a person can, part of that self-commitment can be, even if a person is comfortable, they can also learn to sort of not be distracted by their comfort and acquire Torah. But comfort can be a distraction sometimes to Torah. Okay. But it's basically, the idea is, I mean, in terms of translating to our context, it's the idea of really being ready to sacrifice for Torah, right? On a simple level, it can mean a person, like Pirkei Avos says, a person should never say, you know, when I'm finished, everything I've done. But sometimes you have that. A person says, you know, when I'm taking care of my exercise, I'm taking care of my meals, and my appointments, and my grandchildren, and my this, and my that, and the other, then I'll come to a shir, right? Then I'll learn. Torah doesn't get like that. You've got to make it a priority. So you've got to give up other stuff sometimes, right? People come in the morning, early morning, late at night, whatever the case is, right? So that's the idea. Torah comes as sacrifice. Okay. So he says, where does this come from? This ability to have self-sacrifice. It comes from our forefathers, right? And he says, this is what the Medrash means, that the Torah was given with fire, with water, and with midbar. He says, what does it mean? Because if you have a look, you'll see that this mysterious nefesh, this concept of self-sacrifice, is embedded into us right from the beginning of where we began as a nation. First of all, we have Fire. What's fire? Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, who began talking about monotheism and belief in Hashem, was ready to jump in the fire. Not he ready to jump in the fire, he was thrown into the fire. Right? Miraculously say, but he was thrown into the fire. He says you can extend this even further to the Akedah. The Akedah, it says in the Pasuk that Hashem, that Moshe Rabbeinu took when he went to the Akedah to take Yitzchak to be sacrificed on the altar. He took Esa Eish Vesamacheles, he took the wood for fire and the knife, right? He was ready to sacrifice Yitzchak on fire, on the Mizbech, for Hashem's sake. So that's the mysterious nefesh, okay. He says, then you could say, okay, that's true, because the Sfarim say that mysterious nefesh of Avraham Avinu is implanted into the DNA of the Jewish people. That's why Jewish people throughout the age were ready to give up their lives for Hashem and for Emunah and Hashem, right, and for Torah. But a person could come and say, well, okay, that's good, but that's only one person. It was nice for Avraham Avinu, but where do you see the collective mysterious nefesh, right? So he says, yeah, by mine, the water, that comes next, the water. By Kriyas Yamsuf, when it came to the Kriyas Yamsuf, and the Mitzrim were pursuing the Jewish people, and they had nowhere to go, they were completely trapped. They didn't know what to do. And Hashem says, Ma titzakelai, why are you crying to me? Speak to the Jewish people and tell them just to move. And Yehuda, the tribe of Yehuda, led by Nachshon and Aminadab, jumps into the water, followed by the whole tribe, followed by the whole of Klal Yisrael. Hashem said, move, so we move. Jump. Ah, there's a water, so we go in the water. Right? So that's the second part. By my. Then a person can say, okay, that's good, but that's only momentarily. You know, it's one thing to have, like, in the moment, to have mysterious nefesh, but to sustain the mysterious nefesh, let's take a heart. Moments, you know, in the moment, mysterious nefesh is easier than sustained mysterious nefesh. Therefore, the Medrash says that there's a third mysterious nefesh in the Midbar, in the desert. The fact that the Jewish people were ready to just follow Hashem, and as the Tanakh says itself, it's one thing, it's an amazing thing. It's a pasuk in Yom Yo where Hashem says, we say in Rosh Hashanah, where Hashem says, he praises the Jewish people, and he says, he'll always remember the faith and the commitment of Am Yisrael that they followed Moshe Rabbeinu into an unknown wilderness, not knowing at all how long they would be there, and not knowing where they were going, and not knowing how they would be sustained in the Midbar, and they followed. They went to the Midbar. They ended up doing it for 40 years, but the concept that a whole nation was ready to go for however long it takes, into a Midbar that was nationhood Mesiras Nefesh and sustained the Mesiras Nefesh. Right? That's the secret. Sustained Mesiras Nefesh is the real secret. Right? Commitment, one of commitment is really good, but sustained commitment, that's where the secret is. So he says, that's what it means that Hashem said to the nations, you want to know why they got the Torah? Not that because of the Yichis, but because they're going to have to work hard. But where do they have the ability to work hard? Something previously has planted the seeds for them to have the ability to acquire something which is a godly wisdom, the Torah, and that's the Yuchsin, that's where they come from, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and then the Shvatim, and so on, because that's the pshat that the Torah was given, Ba'esh, Ba'mayim, Ubamidbar. He ends up with a very beautiful thing. He says, you know that today is Rosh Chodesh, right? Tomorrow is Beis Sivan, the second of Sivan. In Shulchan Aruch it's called Yom HaMeyuchas. It's a day that Hashem made us a special nation, right? In fact, we don't say Tachlin tomorrow because we don't say Tachlin until the 12th of Sivan, right? Because it's a special day tomorrow, it's when we became a special nation. Now, what are the words that Hashem used to make us a special nation? So it says, as we talked about last week, that when the Yidden arrived at Har Sinai on this day, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, Hashem didn't tell us anything, but he started to communicate on the second of Sivan. He told Moshe Rabbeinu to tell us that he's taken us out of Egypt, we're going to receive the Torah, and we will be an Am Segula. Am Segula means a special nation, right? Special nation. You know that joke they say in the Shtetl that Hashem, a guy turned to Hashem and he said, you know, God will be the chosen nation. Maybe you could choose someone else for a time, you know, some of the time. Right? So why am I saying that? Because chosen nation is not just a yichus, it's a big responsibility. In this word itself, you can see that. Because segula means something special. But segula also comes the word segol. Segol is a vowel, one of the vowels, the three, right? Three dots, what we call the segol, right? And the air sound. You'll be an am of a segol. What does it mean, am of a segol? The segol, it says in the Mefarshim, it's a vowel. However you turn it, it'll always be a segol. If you turn it upside down, it'll still be a segol, right? It doesn't, it's always be three dots. Every it's like a 3-point triangle. Every turn it'll be a triangle. It'll always be the three dots there. That's the pshat. Vayisem li am segul, it'll be a am of a segul, means that mysterious nefesh, that commitment that you're going to have, needs to be constant. Not just one-off. Whatever situation you're in, it's am segul. So that's the mysterious nefesh. So that's the one connection between the parsha and Shavuos, because this is what the Medrash says, that the parsha starts off with Hashem speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Midbar Sinai, to emphasize that the Torah was given in a Midbar, it was given in a desert, which is connected to the water that was given with it, the fire, because that's the prerequisite to really acquiring Torah and to really understanding Torah. And that's the concept of Am Segula. Okay, now, that's one idea. Next idea comes from the second part of what I print in the parasha, which is the mitzvah to count. So we know that from time to time Hashem counts the Yidden. But now we're going to show how the counting of the Yidden is specifically connected to Matan Torah, connected to the giving of the Torah. So we know one of the big problems of the mitzvah to count Jews is that Hashem knows how many we are. What's the point of keeping counting us? Okay. So we know that Rashi says that mitoichi bosom, that because we're precious, so you count something that's precious. Therefore, sort of it's like a person counts something that's very precious to him. You know, if you have diamonds, you count the diamonds. You have golden coins, you count the golden coins. Something that's precious, keep counting to make sure they're still in, and know how many you still have, and so on. Hashem counts us. So that's not really, I mean, what does that mean? I mean, Hashem, we're precious anyways. Hashem knows them. That's when you don't know what, that's when you count because you're not sure what it is, right? But Hashem knows how many we are. So how does the love, the preciousness increase by counting us? So the Shalah says like this. He says, actually, it's got to do with something else. There's a halacha in Kashrus. You know that we have this idea in Kashrus about something becoming bottle, right? So let's say if a little drop of milk falls into a big pot of meat and there's more than 60 times of the milk, so it's not a problem because it's nullified, right? We have also something, it doesn't always apply only when something becomes mushed together. It could be even when things are different together, just because there's more, either by majority or 60, sometimes 100, depending on what it is. There's all sorts of laws of bittul. There is a halacha, if you turn over your handout, that the Gemara says, Dover shebeminyan, right? Dover shebeminyan afilu bedrabbanan leibotel, kol shekein d'oraisa. Something that's counted can never be nullified, right? So what does this mean? It means like this. The Gemara makes a difference of between something that's important doesn't become nullified in the following way. You know, when you go to a store, there's different ways you buy things, right? So for example, I don't know, you buy peanuts, right? So you're never going to buy a dozen peanuts or 100 peanuts. You'll buy by the weight. So give me a kilo, half a kilo, a pound, whatever. Yeah. Flour, the same thing, all this kind of stuff. Then there's certain things, you'll never ask for a bag of something or a kilo of something. Eggs, for example, is an example the Gemara gives. You ask for a number. Can I have a dozen eggs? 2 dozen eggs, right? Okay. So the Gemara says like this, something that you buy without counting, like you ask for a bunch or a kilo or a pound, whatever the case is, those are the things that can become bottleneck, they can become nullified, right? Something, however, that the style of buying it is that you count it, that means because it's got more value, right? So each egg is costly. You're not going to ask for a pound of eggs, right? So therefore, those kind of things are not bottled. It cannot become nullified. Says the Shalom, that's why the Jews are counted. Why? Know that the Chazal tell us that the Jewish nation is kifso achas bein shivim zaivim. The Jews are one sheep among 70 wolves. There's a great danger that we can become nullified, become bottled. So how does Hashem make sure that we're not bottled? He counts us. When He counts us, we are called, in halacha, we are called a dover shebeminyan. We're called a counted thing. And a counted thing, halachically, can never become bottled. Right? Okay. That's what the Shalosh says. So the Rebbe, the Babach Rebbe, asked the following question. He says, still hasn't answered the question. Because why is a counted thing not become bottled? Because it's counted? No. It doesn't become bottled because it's important. How do we know that it's important? Because you count it, right? So counting something reveals its intrinsic importance, right? But with Hashem, the Jewish people, sell the words, he doesn't have to count even for that. He knows how many we are already, which means we already have the intrinsic importance. So how does it answer the question? In other words, if the counting itself would accomplish the halachic status of it not becoming bottled, then we understand. So you have to count something for it to become bottled, right? But if it's not really the counting is just a sign. The counting reveals that this has intrinsic importance. So then, the Jews have an intrinsic importance. Why does Hashem need to count us? Follow the question? This is something very beautiful, and it also answers a very important question in this mitzvah of counting the Jews. He says, because this has to do with the whole idea of Matan Torah. How so? So we know the famous idea that we've said many, many, many times, and that is like this. We know that when Hashem gave the Torah, there's the famous Medrash where Hashem said that there were two governments, two countries, whatever. One was higher, one was lower. They made a gzeira, made a decree that the one country cannot come to the other country and vice versa, and they would remain separate, right? And then one day they decided, no, they're going to break the separation, they can join together. Similarly, it says, before Matan Torah, Hashem said, I'm in heaven, the people are in the earth, and the two don't meet, right? Came Matan Torah, Hashem said, now it's time to know that the Shemaim can come to the Eretz, and the Eretz can come to Shemaim, and they can meet. What does this mean? It means like this. Before Matan Torah, before the Torah was given, there was a separation between the physical and the spiritual, between heaven and earth, right? Even the spirituality that existed in this world was kept separate from the physical. So we've said this many times, just to refresh your memory. So for example, we know that even though Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov kept the mitzvahs, but we are told that although they kept the mitzvahs, and in a very intense spiritual way, they never had the ability for that mitzvah to have any impact on the physical world. Right? In other words, this idea we have today, for example, then we take a piece of leather and we make tefillin and we make a mezuzah, that the actual piece of leather is changed and transformed and becomes holy, that didn't exist before Matan Torah. Because heaven and earth didn't mix, Gashmius and Ruchnius, there was a separation. A logical separation. Because they had two completely different things. Logically, physical and spiritual shouldn't be able to come together. It is the greatness of Matan Torah, right? It is the greatness of the giving of the Torah that Hashem, it says in other places, it says the way it worked was that Hashem created such a divine revelation at the giving of the Torah, where he said, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God. And we taught, what does Anoichi mean? I means Hashem's essence, right? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. So it says that the world was created perfect. We need to know what that means. So the Adam HaRishon, a few hours before he sinned, that's a very, very complicated couple of hours to understand where the world was at that time, right? So what it does mean is, it means that at that time, the divine creative origin of the world was obvious. Right? Doesn't mean necessarily that it's the same holiness as it is today when we do a mitzvah or something. Okay? So even then there was a difference. But certainly after the sin where the idea of klippa became mixed into the world, and the world became a place which by definition conceals Hashem's presence, Gashmius and Ruchnius couldn't meet. But even before the sin, it was different than after Matan Torah, but particularly from after the sin onwards. Right? Now, when I came Matan Torah, Hashem said the word Anoichi. Right? Anoichi means I. So in Hasidic philosophy, it explains that I means I, my essence. Even before I'm called, I cannot be described. I'm completely undefined. Right? So we know that we've talked about this many times, that when Hashem, on the one hand, Hashem is sometimes called by a name, but the truth is Hashem is limited by the name. In other words, Hashem in his essence has no name. Why? Because a name describes Hashem in a particular context. Now, for example, the name Yudke Vavke describes Hashem in his infinity. Elohim describes Hashem how he relates to the world. That's finiteness. Hashem is neither infinite or finite, as we know, right? He's undefined. He transcends both of them. So when Hashem revealed that Anoichi at Matan Torah, when he revealed his essence, he revealed him as he is, transcendent and higher than both the finite and the infinite, both physical and spiritual. He gave the koyach, it was a dramatic experience. He gave the koyach to bring together the physical and the spiritual. Right? That was the event of Matan Torah. Ever since Matan Torah, we bring godliness into the world. Why? Because we know that's the whole purpose of creation. Right? Otherwise, what's the point? To learn Torah in a spiritual way, the angels can do that too. Yeah? Which of course is hinted in the whole Gemara of the famous Gemara Matan Torah, where the Malachim, the angels came to Hashem and said, why are you giving the Torah away to the earth? Give it to us. So Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you better give a good answer. Why you need the Torah? So what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? He says to Malachim, it says in the Torah that the Jews came out of Egypt. You went to Egypt? It says in the Torah you shouldn't commit adultery. You have a Yetzirah, you're tempted by adultery. You're tempted by dishonesty. You know, you don't have a Yetzirah. So why should you get the Torah? Right? And the obvious question is, right? The obvious question is that the Malachim weren't stupid. They knew that they don't have a Yetzirah. So what was their point to begin with? Because we know Torahs are many levels, right? So of course the same Torah that says you shouldn't commit adultery or steal, that can be taught in a spiritual level. Whatever it means in the spiritual realms, I don't know. Right? And that's the Torah that they wanted. Of course they didn't want the Torah that talks about how you live in a physical body. They wanted the Torah in its purest form. And Moshe Rabbeinu says you can't have it because that's not the point of the Torah. The point of the Torah is that it should give the ability to refine and to transform and to change those people who have a Yetzirah, those people who are tempted by adultery and by stealing. That's what the Torah was given for a physical world that is dark, that conceals Hashem. That's the point of the Torah. To bring God into the world, right? To reveal God into the world. Oh, that's the case. So the Rebbe explains, that's why we read Bamidbar just before Matan Torah. Because Hashem said to count, right? So we have all these questions. What's the point of counting? Hashem knows the number. Hashem knows that we're intrinsically important. Hashem knows that we can't become bottle and nullify the rest of the world. So what do you have to count for? You have to count, because that's the whole point of giving of the Torah. It's all very nice for Hashem to know. It's all very nice for us to have intrinsic worth and value, which is spiritual and hidden from the world. The whole point of Matan Torah, that all that has to be revealed in the world. It's got to be obvious. It's got to be seen from the point of view of the consciousness of the world, not from Hashem's point of view, not from Hashem's perspective. If something is true only from Hashem's perspective because it's intrinsic and he doesn't need anything else, that's great, he doesn't need anything else, but that doesn't achieve the purpose of Matan Torah, right? The whole purpose of Matan Torah is for everything that is true to be felt as true in the world, from the world's perspective. Ah, so Hashem says, well, you have to count. You have to actually carry it out in the physical world. You have to count the Jewish people so that the world should understand and appreciate the value of that counting. That's a good segue into the whole idea of Matan Torah. The very reason why we have a mitzvah to count the Jews explains what Matan Torah is all about. And then he says something amazing. He says, it answers an unbelievable question. Right? There's always this thing that when we count the people, they're counted from 20 years old upwards. Why? I mean, what kind of way of taking a census is that? Right? Why from 20? What's the number? What's the magic number 20? So in Pirkei Avos it says, "Ben Esrim Lirdoif." When you turn 20, that's a time to pursue the world. What does that mean? It means that in this is symbolic of a general idea, but it means that a person's life is really divided into two. Because we know that in order to bring Hashem into the world, you first have to be immersed in holiness, right? And then you bring the holiness into the world. Right? We talked about that many times. That's the formula. So it plays out the way a person lives their life in years. That a Pirkei is telling us until 20, a person's not ready to interact with the world yet. Until 20, a person should be sheltered. Learn Torah, go to yeshiva, whatever the case is, right? Whatever the mechanism is. Until 20, that's the time that you form the immersion in spirituality. Then when a person turns 20, or around there at least, but 20 is the number that the Pirkei uses, Lirdov, that's when it comes time to interact with the world. Right? In other words, until the age from birth till 20 symbolizes the Torah as it's in its purity. From 20 symbolizes the Torah and how it has to transform the world. You follow? Oh. So now, since the whole idea of the mitzvah of counting is the Matan Torah concept, the whole idea is not that we need the counting. We actually don't need the counting. Hashem himself knows the counting. And he knows the value, he knows the worth. So what's the point of counting? So that the Matan Torah concept should occur, that the world should understand the counting. That's why you only count from 20. Because that's when that job mainly starts. That's why that explains the mitzvah of why the counting only starts from 20. Okay. That's the one idea. Second idea of why counting is connected to Matan Torah, he says, is like this. First of all, it's interesting that we have another counting that's connected with Matan Torah. It's very interesting that Matan Torah is connected with counting. We always read Bamidbar before Shavuos, as we said, that's mitzvah of counting. And we also count the Omer, going on to counting, right? So what's the idea? Counting means that everything is equal. Correct?
No.
No? Mm-hmm. Why not?
Why yes?
I'll tell you why. When you count something, not if you value something, but if you count something. So you say, like for example, let's say a minion, right? Let's say something happens every day in shul. You look around, is there a minion yet, right? You want to count 10 men. So you count, you don't say not one, not two, you're not supposed to count people. But the idea is to count to 10, right? You have 10 people. What does the number 10 show you? That there's 10 what? There's 10 men over mitzvah there, right? How about if one's a big Rosh Hashiva and a big Tzaddik, the other guy's just a simple youth off the street? Makes no difference. Because for the minion, that's irrelevant. So what are we counting? We're counting the differences in them, we're counting what's insane with them. Right? The part that we're counting is the part that they share. A Jewish, oh, my mitzvah, male, you're a minion. That's it. That's all we need. So these 10 people share the exact same thing. Right? If I wanted to find out who this group is, a Rosh Hashiva, who's a Talmud Chacham, who's an Ignoramus, I wouldn't count 1 to 10. I'd do an assessment on each person's value. It's different, right? So counting highlights the sameness between people. Now, what part of us is the same when they count the Yidden? What part of us is same? A person has many things, right? So we have intellect, we have emotions, we have abilities, we have behavior. The neshama, exactly. The depth of the neshama, right? In other words, the part of the neshama that is exactly the same, that is counted. That's the same, right? What is that part? That part goes back to the first thing we talked about. That part is the Mesiris Nefesh. That's the Pintaliyid. Right? Pintaliyid, which is inseparably connected to Hashem, which every Yid has. When it comes to how they express that, okay, so that's, there's differences between one and the other, right? But when Hashem reveals himself in Matan Torah, and he chooses Am Yisrael as his nation, and he speaks individually to every single Yid, and every single neshama that's at Har Sinai, he's speaking to everyone equally. Individually, but equally. You know that, yeah, because it says, Anochi Hashem Alekecha, he spoke in the singular form. Alekecha Yoga, right? But he's saying the exact same thing to every Yid. Anochi Hashem Alekecha, right? Why is he appealing to that part of every Jew? Because Hashem is saying that I'm connecting to the essence of who you are, and you need to connect to me with the essence of who you are. Which means you have to have a serious nefesh. So it wasn't just a nice thing that Hashem chose the essence of who we are. It's also our commitment. Going back to what we said before, what Hashem wants, He wants our whole self. And He wants consistency. He's asking for a commitment that is constant. Constant comes to even some serious nefesh, even if we need to sacrifice for. Where does that consistency come from? From also the Etzem HaNasham. You see, the parts of us that are different from each other are also different in ourselves. You understand? Like if you like feelings, emotions, for example, right? A person doesn't love today the way they love tomorrow. In a relationship with someone, loves someone. The love is not the same every day. A person not fearful every day the same. A person doesn't have the ability to think the same every day. Right? Hashem gave us the Torah. He says, I'm counting you first. Oh, we read that way. We're going to get the Torah on Shavuos. We have to understand what our commitment is on Shavuos, what our relationship to Hashem is on Shavuos. It's Hashem is connecting the depth of Him to the depth of us. What does that bring? It brings an inseparable connection. It's not an eternal connection, that's true. But it's also a commitment that's very strong. It's a call for mysterious nefesh, it's a call for real sacrifice, consistency. That no matter what your situation is, no matter if you're in a good mood or a bad mood, or if things are tough or things are calm, it's the same Yiddishkeit. That is accomplished through counting, because counting highlights the sameness. Now, just to end off with a deep idea within that, we mentioned that we also count Sfiras Omer, right? We count the Omer. And here comes the interesting thing. Because the Omer, on the one hand, is connected with counting. Yeah? Counting, same thing. When you count days, the same thing. Every day is the same. And yet, the whole essence of counting the Omer, we count 7 weeks, is to work with our outer layers. We're working on our middos, we're working on our emotions. We're working on our chesed, on our gvura, on our tiferes, right? Where everyone's different. We're not working on our pintalayid, we're working on the, right? Ne'ilah and Yom Kippur, yeah, that's where we work on our pintalayid, we reveal it. But and there's no chesed, gvura, tiferes, there's just one, right? That's why it says Yom Kippur is one day everywhere, because that's the pintalayid. Okay, we get that. That makes sense. It's oneness, right? The Omer is different. The Omer is working on the outer layers of our personality, not the essence of our neshama. Working on a chesed, a gvura, tiferes. How does that go together? So here's the idea. The idea is like this. Obviously, we don't operate the entire time on our essence of our neshama, because we serve Hashem with our consciousness, with our seichel, with our midas, with our intellect, with our cognition, with our emotions, and so on. Right? And taka, everyone is different. Not everyone learns the same. Not everyone davens the same. Not everyone feels the same. Everyone's different. Everyone's a different journey. But it's connected with accounting because, like this, when you have a group of people, let's say, right? We have in Jewish history, right? Let's say we're suddenly, 100 people all decided, no, they're giving up life for Hashem. The Pintalayid just came out, yeah? We have horrific stories even of, like, there's a story when, people jumping into the fire because they didn't want to convert or so have a dessert, right? At that moment, tak, everyone mamash was the same. It doesn't matter, because it could be the Talmud Chacham, the Am Haaretz, the older person, the lower person. They all got the same amunah and jump into the fire, right? Okay. That's when the Pintalayid comes out, right? On a normal day, however, we don't serve Hashem that way. Everyone has to do their own journey. But at the same time, in everyone's journey, in other words, on a regular day, our adrenaline, our Pintalayid is more in the background. Yeah? We're not serving Hashem with that adrenaline of self. We're not supposed to. We're supposed to use our brains and our feelings. But we're supposed to be driven and inspired by our Pintalayid. In other words, our foundation has to be commitment. When a foundation is commitment, coming from the real essence of our neshama, then the way it will play out in your intellect and in my intellect and someone else's intellect will be different. It will still be, it'll be different, each person will be different, but it will be a different quality. When your foundation is that unwavering commitment, then even when you're working on your conscious layers, it's a whole different ballgame. Because what your foundational inspiration comes from that real deep commitment. If you just work on your seichel, it'll be very limited. But when you work with your outer layers, but it's driven by the commitment coming from the neshama, then it's a whole different problem. It's a different quality. The potential is endless. Even though you have to do your thing, but it's a much greater connection. And that's why we have this counting story. So when Hashem counts us on one hand, Hashem's counting us and says, okay, everyone's the same. I want the connection is to the Pintel Yid. But you also have to count the Omer before Matan Torah. Because you have to take the idea of counting and then translate it into your outer conscious layers. When you serve Hashem, when we get the Torah on Shavuos, which is a commitment coming from the essence of the soul, but then you have to translate that like the Omer into your layers of your personality, each one in their own way, but driven by the Pintel Yid.
I feel like it's the wrong way around. When the Omer should come off. It's like part of the Malchus implementation.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but it's a model showing us what the goal is. The whole Omer is like that, because the Omer was too fast anyways. Right? The Omer was just a model of how it has to happen. We say that the Omer, the Yidden got the Omer, so they should refine themselves in order to get the Torah, right? Did they really refine themselves? To a certain degree, it was all fast-tracked, which is why they served the Eagle afterwards, right? But Hashem packaged the model for us. He says, this is the goal. This is what I need you to know before you get the Torah. Yeah. So that explains that also another connection between Midbar and the Torah, the idea of counting, because that's what the Matan Torah is, coming from the essence of the soul. Okay? Stop there.